The sound of praise for your Sunday morning.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Introducing Reverend A.R. Bernard of the Christian Cultural Center.
Was the son of a preacher man.
And Rabbi Joseph Potasnik of Religion on the Line.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Now, on Talk Radio 77 WABC, here's the Reb and the Rabbi, where faith matters.
Good morning, I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, during this week, it's traditional to say to one another as Jews, Chag Sameach, which means a happy holiday. Sadly, I can tell you, when you're in Israel, people will say Chag. They won't use the word Sameach, happy, because it's very, very difficult to be happy when you're hurting so deeply. So that's what we experience.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be an interesting conversation. We have our guest, Cardinal Timothy Dolan. And I suspect that we're going to talk about one of the key principles in Christian social ethic called subsidiarity. You're familiar with that. I don't know what you would consider that in your Jewish tradition. Subsidiarity comes from the root words subsidies, which means help. You know, it's where we get the word subsidize. But it's a principle of social organization that holds that social and political issues should be dealt with at the most immediate or local level, because those are the individuals who are most savvy about it. Too often, things are handled from the ivory tower of those in power and not from those who are on the ground, what we call the grassroots. And this is a very important principle within our Christian social ethic. Do you have something like that?
There's a statement, interestingly, in the Talmud that before you enact a law, go out and see what the people are doing. Talk to the people. So you're not, you know, operating from, you know, 30 feet above and not know what's going on the ground. I can tell you this, you know, I can relate to what's happening here in New York City. One of the things we decided, the Board of Rabbis, is we're going to sit and meet with the students, because if we don't, the students at the various universities, and if we don't talk to these Jewish students who are hurting right now, we don't know what's really going on. It's very easy to sit in our office and come up with all kinds of statements, but unless you listen to the other who's in pain, you don't have really, I think, the authority to write an authentic statement.
Who is we? Who is the we that will meet?
So
with
we're gonna start. We're gonna have rabbis of different denominations, because that's at the New York Board of Rabbis. We're gonna sit down with students from a number of the campuses. I want to hear from them. I want to hear what you go through. What is it like walking to class? What is it like sitting in a classroom when you're surrounded by people who don't respect your dignity? I think we need to hear those voices, and we need to let them know that we hear their voices.
No, I think that's great. There'll be a series of these meetings.
Yeah,
and is it going to take place on the college campus?
We're going to do it away from the college campus at first. Okay. You know, and again, we're going to talk. I want to hear from the students what they want. You know, we're very good at imposing what we think is right for others. Let's hear the others tell us how we can be more constructive in that engagement.
We
have someone coming on today, as you mentioned earlier, who is such a blessing for the city of New York. You know, His Eminence Timothy Cardinal Dolan, really a remarkable human being who has this boundless enthusiasm wherever he goes and makes people feel that they matter. And I think one of the things that we need to do more of is be more inclusive. Tell people that faith speaks to them. Well, you do this at your church. I've been there. That our faith has something to say to you. It's not just reading the front page of the paper.
Right. It's personal. And I'm looking forward to our conversation. It's always a great conversation when the Cardinal joins us. So we are going to take a break and stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the Rev and the Rabbi with our special guest, Cardinal Timothy Dolan.
Where faith matters. The Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
I just want to say that we are so honored today to have His Eminence Timothy Cardinal Dolan. And I would add to that that someone said a friendship is one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself. For me to have friends like you, Reverend Bernard, Cardinal Dolan, is a great blessing in my life. And I am grateful for you, especially during this painful period. We're a people, Jewish people, we're in pain. And at least when you have those who stand with you and speak up for you, that is reassuring. So thank you. Your Eminence, always a pleasure.
Rabbi Potasnik, thank you for the gracious words, and might I reciprocate them. And to you, my brother and friend, Passover blessings. And Reverend Bernard, you know my esteem for you, friendship and fraternity. And you and I renew to you Paschal Easter blessings in this glorious Easter season.
This is wonderful. When I grow up, I'm going to talk like that, Rabbi. You know I'm working my way.
We'll keep up with your tutorial. Don't worry. So, Your Eminence, you called me from Israel, and at the end of the conversation, you said, I'm praying
hey,
for...
Hey, Reverend Bernard, I called him collect, and it didn't work, so then I had
So, at the end of the conversation, you said, look, Joe, I'm praying for you. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, you're facing drones, missiles, bombs, and you're praying for me. And then I see what's going on here, especially on various campuses. We need your prayers. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Talk about that trip to Israel.
You bet I will. I went, you know, this is for none of the three of us. We've been there frequently, thanks be to God. This was not my first trip to Israel. It, God willing, will not be my last. I went kind of officially, Reverend Bernard and Rabbi Potasnik, because one of my duties as Archbishop of New York is to be the chair of something called the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which is celebrating its 75th anniversary of aid to the tiny beleaguered Christian communities throughout the world. But as you would know, most of them would be located in the ancient biblical lands. And so we try our best to help them. So I kind of went to celebrate our anniversary and to try to give them some encouragement and, yeah, some help. However, I also said, look, I'm not only going over for the Christians. This is a very tough time for our Jewish neighbors, and I need to reach out to them. So it was, I hope, a rather successful choreography of seeing both. I spent a lot of time with the survivors of the October 7th monstrosity, with some of the families of hostages. I was able to have a wonderful Shabbat dinner with a friend of the three of us, Rabbi David Rosen. Mm-hmm. I was able to visit the president of Israel. But then, of course, I spent a lot of time with the Christians, with my brother bishops who were there, with the Orthodox community, with the different ministries, apostolates, charity, education, healthcare efforts that we try our best to vivify in the land called Holy, which, by the way, serves all. There's Jews, there's Christians, and there's Muslims at these different schools and healthcare clinics and all. So that was kind of the purpose of it. Now, all this was planned, brothers, before the October 7th savage assault. So it took on a much more astute meaning this time. And I would have to tell you, first of all, it was a very thorough visit. It was enlightening for me. But I do have to admit to you, and I don't think you'll be surprised, it was very dismal. The worries, the fears, the anxieties, and yes, the anger on both sides of our Israeli people and in the Palestinian community was raw and very evident. Balancing that out would be the balancing out for me were two things. For one, intramurally, kind of seeing the good work that we've been able to do over there. And number two, listening to the people, the regular people. Rabbi Potasnik, I wish you could have been with me when I visited a Palestinian refugee camp in Bethlehem. And this one man spoke and he said, please, when you go back to New York, tell the Jewish people that we do not hate them. And he didn't say we. He said I do not hate them. I have some worries and some things to speak to them about, but I do not hate them, and I want to live in peace with them, and that's the only way we're gonna settle this. And then when I would meet with get this, the survivors of October 7th, who would have every rational reason in the world to be filled with vitriol. And to hear these people say, we were working closely with the Palestinians before this horror, and we want to continue to do that. And we will not let this rob us of our dreams to make Israel a land of justice and opportunity for all, including the Palestinians. I was so moved by that. And it struck me, Reverend Bernard and Rabbi Potasnik, that the more I listen to kind of the common folk, the wiser they are, when I would sometimes listen to some of the leaders, I got a little afraid. But heck, I think we see this in our own country, don't you? When you listen, when you sit at a diner, or if you sit on a bar stool, which I hear sometimes people do, you'll hear wisdom and goodwill. And not all the time, but very often you will. When you sit at a dinner table, when sometimes it's more official, it gets a little tough. I don't know our listeners now. With Rabbi Potasnik and Reverend Bernard and I sit at a table about six times a year around my table at my house behind St. Patrick's for something called the Commission of Religious Leaders, a choral. We have talked about very blunt, festering things with always a note of friendship, fraternity, and civility. And that's what I'm talking about, sitting around the table. So there was a lot of darkness. There was a lot of light. There was a lot of, I mean, you guys, I've been through a lot of places. You remember when I went to Ukraine, when I went to troubled areas. I've never had to go down to a bomb shelter.
Cardinal, how do we get that conciliatory message transmitted to what's happening here? I walk down the street and I see signs. I was at Columbia University the other day. Burn down Tel Aviv. We are all Hamas, right?
We hate America.
Death to America.
Rabbi, great question. And it's especially poignant for the three of us since we're in the business of reconciliation. Now, I just came. I'm up here in Yonkers at our seminary where I just, thank you, I got to leave a priest council meeting early to working on this. And so we had one of the priests on the council is one of the chaplains at Columbia University. And he gave a little report. And he did speak on some reasons to be alarmed, as you just mentioned, Rabbi Potasnik. He said, there are some real extremes there. There are some real hateful people there. There is some real toxin being spewed out. But he said, I can tell you that the majority of the students with whom I meet, and he meets hundreds a day, either at mass or at table or who would stop by, they say, you know, we just want to learn. We want to be friendly with one another. The best thing we can do as university students is try to study the complexity of the situation in the Mideast, not to be spouting off in front of the cameras and microphone. Once again, I sometimes think I can only speak for myself. I sometimes think I listen too much to the kind of the experts, the leaders, the publicity people. When I listen to the common folks, I get a lot. Let me say this, and Rabbi Bernard, you tell me if I'm right or wrong. I have never heard more thoughtful, perceptive commentary and criticism of some of the situations in Israel than from my Jewish neighbors here in New York. They know there needs to be reform in policies in Israel, just like there needs to be reform here. Are they ever strongly defensive of their beloved country? And rightly so, and I'm with them. But they also can be critics. And that's a good thing, isn't it? That's a good thing. I saw one of the things that frustrated me is more when I met with the Palestinian side, when I would hear the people say, Hamas doesn't speak for us. We want peace. Yes, there's injustice. Yes, we want to be blunt in correcting them. Yes, we want to bring those to the attention of Israel. But we want to live at peace, and we want to live in respect, and we do not want to exterminate Israel. And we hate what happened on October 7th. What scared me, Rabbi Potasnik, is when I would say to them, it would help if you said that publicly. Mm-hmm. And they will say, we're scared. We're scared. We're scared.
Yeah.
You know what? I think, weren't you telling me, Reverend Bernard, you saw a poster and it said Free Palestine, and somebody had spray painted below it from Hamas. From and Hamas, I heard that, see? I heard that, and I'm thinking, and I said to them, even Rabbi Potasnik, so I was happy to have a meeting with the president of the Palestinian Authority, Abbas. Mm-hmm. I was privileged to have a meeting with the president of Israel, Mr. Herzog. When President Abbas said to me, "We do not hate the Jews. Yes, there are injustices that we feel strongly about, but we know we want to live in peace." And I said, "Sir, it would help if you would say that, because you don't hear them say that publicly." Right. I would have to say, here in New York, and I don't know about you, Reverend Bernard, if you agree with me or not, I'm proud that I hear Jewish neighbors and friends, including Rabbi Potasnik, who are passionate about their defense of Israel, say, "But we're also pro-Palestinian. They want justice. Mm. They want justice for the other side." I'm not putting you on the spot, am I, Rabbi Potasnik?
You can be pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian.
Yes, you can. Yeah. The two are not. Yeah. It's a both-and thing. It's not an either-or. Yeah. And if we got more people to say that, I think we'd be better off. One of the things, the Sunday I was there, fellas, Pope Francis, you know, every Sunday at noon, he appears at the window of his study to pray with the people gathered below and to give a little fervorino. And he spoke about the situation we're speaking about. And when he came to the end, he said, "There's three things we ought to all agree on. Number one, bring the hostages home now. Number two, we need a ceasefire. And number three, we need to start disregarding the extremes and listening to the people of reconciliation." Now, both President Herzog and both President Abbas told me they highly appreciated those remarks of the Pope. And I think that kind of captures it. I don't know. Joe, you're closer to the situation. Am I making sense?
Yeah. The only problem I have is when people say ceasefire, we can't go back to
It has to be on both sides.
And you need to surrender.
I mean, you talk about Israel. Israel's saying, "Yeah, you bet we want a ceasefire, especially with those missiles coming over."
Yeah.
And it wasn't just that attack from Iraq. Northern Israel is being bombarded daily from Hezbollah.
Yeah, we can't leave Hamas in place.
No.
How
you get somebody there is another question. Is this the best way to do it? I don't know. But Hamas has got to go.
Place of calling.
I didn't like
calling
it.
Calling me Rabbi Bernard. No.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, you finally got a promotion.
I hope the three of us are. All right. The man you and I serve, Jesus, was called Rabbi too. So I don't think
I can embrace it with no problem. That's why.
I saw on the night of the bombing. All right. Now, so we were ushered down to the bomb shelter immediately. By the way, the building I was staying at, which was Notre Dame, a beautiful center for pilgrims, for anybody but heavily Christian, as you might imagine, is empty. There are no pilgrims, which is particularly sobering as Passover was approaching. But as I went down, I kind of snuck out. I shouldn't have done it to a balcony. I said, "I want to see some of this." And sure enough, you know, I could see the missiles were coming. Thanks be to God, I saw them blown out of the sky. But I also heard, as the bombs were coming in, the Arab section cheering the bombs. Mm-hmm. Now, that's hideous.
Yeah.
Hideous. I mean, for one, they were aimed at them. For one of the missiles shot down was going to land on the mosque. All right. So you'd think they would be equally critiquing that as they are with some understanding of Israeli policies, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Cardinal, how do we bridge the gap? You've touched on what you and I know and share as Christian. Of course, it's part of Catholic social ethic, and that's subsidiarity. Those who are closest to the problem understand it better. You pointed out the disconnect between those in power and the masses. And what we hear most of all is the rhetoric between those in power. How do we bridge that gap between the two?
Well, let me take it a step further, Reverend Bernard, because you're on something. The closer we get to the people, the closer we get to the grassroots, the better success we have for peace and justice, with stability for both Palestinians and the prosperity and growth and security of Israel. And we need to listen to them. Now, one of the great things I heard, especially more on the side of Israeli leadership, is their fear that this is becoming more and more international. People might criticize President Biden. I appreciate the fact that he's often cautioned that we don't need to extend this beyond. And we all know that Israel has become the punching bag for all the neighbors around. And we all know as well that the Palestinian challenge has become a punching bag for everybody around. And I often wondered if we could get more grassroots local folks, maybe the better off we are. Yeah. I might be terribly juvenile in thinking this way, because maybe things are just too raw, and maybe we do need great people like a George Mitchell's and Henry Kissinger's of the world to rise up and say, let us come in and try to do something. I don't know. And one of the things I said, brothers, is one of the plagues we got here. I should be talking. I'm coming off as one, but there's too many know-it-alls. All these people, whether they be these obnoxious protesters on campus, or our commentators, or some of our politicians, they've got the immediate answer. Here's what we got to do. We got to do it right now, and we got to do it, and everything will be fixed. This has been conflict, violence, tension, Rabbi Potasnik, is nothing new in the land of the Bible, the land that you call the Jewish homeland. It's been going on from the beginning. I think Reverend Bernard and I figure out that's probably why God decided to become incarnate at that most tortured area of the earth, because that's where most we needed to hear the message of peace and reconciliation. It hasn't been sinking in.
You know what's very sad? I remember Abba Ibn, it was the ambassador to the UN, he said, looking back at Palestinians, they've never missed an opportunity to miss an opportunity. I mean, you look at all of the opportunities, the fact that there's still a refugee camp. I mean, we don't have a Jewish refugee camp, because Jews resettled, rebuilt, and started their own, country. Palestinians had that opportunity time after time and rejected it, said no.
Let me say two things, one of which I'm agreeing with you, the other one you might not find so satisfying. For one, many of the Jewish people over there said, they keep talking about a two-state solution. They said, we sort of thought we had one with Gaza. Mm-hmm. You take this. Mm-hmm. It's yours. There'll be no Israeli troops there. You run it. And it's they blew it. We saw the answer to that on October 7th. On the other hand, the Palestinians will say, yes, we need to build our own settlements and all, but our homes were taken away from us. We have a home. You know, I don't know if you heard the story. I visited this refugee camp, and the people, they were wearing around their neck keys. Yeah. I said, what's this about? These are the keys to their homes in Jerusalem that they still want to return to. Now, I don't know if that's realistic or not. I worry, and I would posit that there's a certain amount of understanding to that. Whether it's realistic or not, I don't know. But maybe a realism would say, you deserve a home, and we want to get you one. It may not be where. I said that, too. I got into an argument. I put my foot in my mouth. I said, why don't the other Arab states say, come on in. We'll take you in, like the Israelis have done for Jews around the world. All right? And they'll say, because this is our home. We've been here for centuries, and we don't want to leave. And we wish a way could be found out where we didn't have to. This is the complications of things. It really, I would go home at night with headaches, and who can sleep with air raid sirens. I thought to myself, Rabbi Potasnik and Reverend Bernard, I thought to myself, how do the people of Israel live with this? I can't. I had a nightmare last night, all right? These people are living this way all the time. One of the things that kind of really, so the day after the attack, which happened to be, the attack came early hours of Sunday morning, our little group is sitting out in front of Notre Dame. Things were as beautiful and calm as could be. We're scared to death. We hadn't slept all night. We're thinking, we ain't going to get home now. If you got to be stuck somewhere, Jerusalem ain't bad. We ain't going to get home because all the flights are canceled. All of a sudden, we're sitting there with a cup of cappuccino, looking out, and the buses are passing, filled with people. They're either going to worship, they're going to family, they're going to work. And I looked, I said, look, fellas, these people have to live through this every day. And life goes on. I said, think of the tension they're under, but yet there's a grit about them. And I'm talking about both sides, Israeli and Palestinian. There's a grit that says, we got to keep at it. We can't give up. And I admired that.
Go ahead.
I want to ask both of you a question, Rabbi Potasnik and Cardinal Dolan. Often we think that the Palestinian are monolithic, and we talk about they've had an opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, but they're not monolithic. You have several entities that are offering different solutions to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You know, Fatah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad. You had the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. You had a democratic solution offered by the Front for the Liberation of Palestine. You had a People's Party, Palestinian People's Party, Palestinian National Initiative. But Hamas seems to have won over all of these other organizations through fear and intimidation. They don't represent all of the Palestinian people. Was that what you found while you were there, Cardinal?
Yeah, you are dead right. You are dead right, Rabbi Bernard. The fact that in one way that's good that there's such a healthy diversity within the Palestinians. We tend to stereotype that they're all cutthroats, and God knows there's too many of them. But that's not all of them, and there are different groupings. And what I'm amazed in day-to-day life. So, you know, when I was at Rabbi Rosen's house for Shabbat, his beautiful wife was saying, we do most of our shopping right around here in Jerusalem, and all the shops are owned by Palestinians. And he said, we get along with them fine. It was remarkable to me. So when I went to one of these magnificent clinics, and there were run by the Daughters of Charity, a group of wonderful Catholic sisters, jammed with moms and babies. And I said to the sister who was showing me around, I said, sister, would most of these people be Islamic, Christian, or Jews? And she said to me, I don't know, and I don't care. I thought, wow, you talk about insightful. Her job was to heal and to serve. She didn't ask for any citizenship papers. She didn't ask for any passport, okay? She didn't ask for any baptismal certificate or bar mitzvah attestation. She knew they were human beings. Can I share with you, and let me know if you agree. So, you know, one of my buddies there, and I think the two of you know him, and he's highly, highly regarded by both sides, by the Israelis and the Palestinians, is the Latin Rite Patriarch of Jerusalem, Pier Battista Pizzaballa. I always tell him, I said, when you retire, come over here, and I will loan you the money to open up a trattoria, because with a name like that, he's a winner, Pier Battista Pizzaballa. Anyway, he's highly respected. You know, Pope, he spent all of his life as a Franciscan in the Holy Land. Pope Francis just named him a cardinal. He's highly regarded. I read his Good Friday sermon, and I said, oh, my gosh, bingo. He says, now, there are those who think all we need is a political situation. He said, we just finished reading The Passion of Jesus, and we saw a political situation when the crowds yelled, give us Barabbas. They wanted a political prisoner. Some people say it's all an economic situation, that a solution. Oh, we got to do this economically. Well, we saw that when Judas sold the Savior for 30 pieces of silver. Some say we need a military solution. Well, we saw that when the Roman soldiers brutally beat, tortured, and crucified Jesus. He said all three of those, political, economic, and military, have to be part of the solution. The only solution, though, all of those have to flow from a common emphasis on the dignity of the human person and the sacredness of human life.
Right.
If we don't recover that, the other three ain't going to work.
You know, it's interesting, though, if you look at history, in the creation of any country, inevitably you have displacement of people. And displacement of people is usually followed by resettlement of people. When it comes to the Middle East, there's no resettlement of Palestinians. They, you know, this refusal. If it's just a land issue, land issues you can resolve. There can be compromises made if you want to live with the other side. But when it's refusal after refusal, then one wonders, is this really a land issue or is this a life issue where you cannot live with the other side? And that's what we wrestle with.
That is a trepidation, and unfortunately, it's a trepidation well grounded on what's happened. We know that in our own history. There were a lot of Tories, British citizens, who were aggrieved at the end of the Revolutionary War. They had to go home. Their businesses and their homes, they left. Okay? So that does happen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That does happen. I suppose, Rabbi Potasnik, we could say that happened in 70 AD when Rome leveled Jerusalem and exterminated the Jews and ran them out. Yeah. Other people came in and settled.
Right.
Okay. And now, so that now then the opposite happened beginning after, am I right in my history here? After the First World War, but especially in 1948 with the establishment of the State of Israel, now we have a safe return. So there's got to be some balance there. I'm with you.
I think you would find the Israelis, as they did with Egypt, as they did with Jordan, compromises are made and resolutions are created when you seek to live with your neighbor in peace. If that if that is part of your DNA, then you can find the solution. If it's not, then it's conflict followed by conflict.
And the cardinal knows.
I was just going to say, Cardinal, you know, I know very in our faith tradition, those words that we recite every Christmas, peace on earth and goodwill toward men. One translation says, peace on earth amongst men of goodwill. If you don't have goodwill when you come to the table, there's not going to be peace. There's not going to be any type of resolution.
You and I, the three of us, have spent our life trying to get that message across. And millions of people, thanks be to God, have worked harder than we have. But there seems to be that crust of just resistance to any type of accommodation or compromise that is just exacerbates. It's pouring kerosene on an already a fiery situation. I don't know. I don't know. I don't like what I can't figure out, Rabbi Potasnik and Reverend Bernard. You hinted at it that you wanted to talk about this. I would have thought that after October 7th, there kind of would have been a worldwide recognition that there is something to this growing horrific anti-Semitism, and there is something to the viciousness of Hamas. We need to listen to it. Even if we are very pro-Palestinian, we need to say, uh-oh, they got a point. Instead, we see this crescendo of anti-Semitism and this irrational protests by these people who ought to know better. The universities that should be leading us in reflective, prudent, sane discussion have now become laboratories of this vitriol.
Right.
This really upsets me.
And you have professors joining hands with them. So
yeah.
One student said to me, I'm sitting in class, and the student sitting next to me is out there the following day with a sign that says, death to Israel, death to the Jews. And he's my classmate.
And the professor next to him, probably.
Yeah.
That's what's scary.
We've been saying for years, education is the answer if it's a moral education, because we saw what educated people did during the Holocaust, building those camps, creating the Nuremberg laws. You need a moral education. Your Eminence, we've come to the end of the segment, unfortunately.
No.
We're going to tell Katzimatidis cancel.
We're not
the next
finished
hour.
with a cardinal here. Are you kidding me?
You know, Your Eminence, it's
well,
just.
Well, listen, I get longer time with Cindy Adams than with you two. This is
you know, Your Eminence, we are prisoners of hope, as we say. And it is written, when there's peace amongst the religions, there will be finally peace in the world. I think we've made progress there amongst the religions. We still have a lot of work to do.
Well, and let me say this, notwithstanding the unfortunately accurate and sobering remarks we made about some of the behavior on campus, aren't the three of us extraordinarily grateful for New York, where we do, I don't know how many cities in the world could have a program like this. I don't know many cities of the world where we're living next door to each other and appreciate and respect each other. I don't know many cities of the world where the archbishop of the city is invited, gets about 15 invitations to the Passover supper, one of which did not come from Rabbi Potastic anyway. But
well, I paid for your call. I paid for your call from Israel. How much more can I spend here? There's a limit. Anyway, thank you so much. And always,
thank you guys. Keep up the good
work.
You
are a blessing to all.
I always leave inspired. You're on. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Cardinal. And stay tuned for more of The Rev and the Rabbi right here on 77 WABC. We'll be right back.
Where faith matters. The Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
What a pleasure to be in the presence of someone who has a profound faith, at the same time, profound respect for people of other faiths. I just think we need more of these conversations. People need to hear and see those who come with different approaches, sitting down together and saying, how do we find common ground?
Yeah. And we emphasize different approaches. Respect for those different approaches and finding common ground is the only way that we're going to have reasonable conversations and come to reasonable conclusions. It goes on and on unless we have reasonable individuals, men of goodwill, as I said, and men and women of goodwill who come to the table. But, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about this with the Cardinal, but, you know, I subscribe to a Judeo-Christian faith. So a lot of our Christian belief is rooted in Judaism. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, Rabbi, because, you know, we as clergy, at times like this, with such conflict, we elevate the conversation, right? As Cardinal Dolan said, to the dignity of the human person and the sacredness of human life. What is our prophetic responsibility? When you think of the prophecy of the Old Testament, and how they engage, because we think of the, you know, the prophetic as predictive of the future, but it's primarily an analysis of the spiritual, moral, political, and social conditions of the times, and then the prophet has to speak into those times. What is our prophetic responsibility, Rabbi?
Let me go back to the story of Moses, who witnessed an Egyptian attacking a Jew. And the Bible says, the Torah says very simply, he looked this way and he looked that way and there was no one and he interceded. And I think because we look both ways, we look for people to stand with us, and very often we don't find them. We don't find people of conviction, of courage. We find people who whisper things to us rather than publicly state them. You know, I support Israel. They'll say to us privately, but they won't say it to their own communities, then the voice of the prophet becomes mandatory. I think if we really are people of faith, then we have a real, it's imperative for us to speak out loudly and consistently, not to say one thing to one group and then in public say something different. Because, you know, the prayer book says every day, you should be public and private the same person. And I find that is not so. The prophet was the same inside and out. The prophet was not duplicitous. And I'm just fearful that we're not seeing enough people speak out. Look, when I look at this college crisis today, and as the cardinal said, who would have thought that on college campuses, supposed to be what, that laboratory of, you know, intellectual exchange, you would see this garbage going on. I was up at Columbia, and I saw those signs. And when you say burn down Tel Aviv, globalize the Intifada, you know, all of that, we're all Hamas. When you see statements like that, I say, well, where's everybody else? And that's what we need. But, we need the everybody else.
How do you respond to them speaking out? Maybe they think that they're being prophetic, that they're engaging in prophetic responsibility, that they're speaking out against what they perceive to be injustices against the Palestinian people, let's say. Right. And then I'll talk to you about something the cardinal said.
When you started, you mentioned the dignity of the individual. If you want my destruction, then you don't subscribe to the dignity of the individual. And I just feel, look, there is a Palestinian problem. No one denies that. I feel that they created the problem over the years by refusing to accept a reasonable solution. Again, if it's land, we can compromise. But if you don't want me to live, I don't know the compromise in that. That's why when people talk of ceasefire, what does ceasefire mean? Go back to October 6th and then live with the threat of October 7th? Ceasefire to means we stop, but you got to dismantle Hamas. You can't have a ceasefire without removing a terrorist organization that openly proclaims its determination to destroy you. There's no secret about it. And they show that on October 7th.
Yeah, see, what you're saying is very important, Rabbi. We have to have what is called a point of reference. Mm-hmm. There has to be something that serves as a basis or standard for evaluation, comparison, and information. What is the point of reference that's being used that people will complain about oppression of one and then turn around and oppress the others? Complain about violence against Palestinians and then exact violence against the Jewish people. There has to be a point of reference. And that point of reference has to be
the dignity of the person.
The dignity of the human person. That's right. The sacredness of human life. Yeah.
I have been to many rallies, bring our hostages home. I've been to many rallies about standing with Israel. I have never heard a speaker state, destroy the Palestinians. I've heard we have to eradicate Hamas because they're seeking to destroy us. And by the way, that's a biblical precept that you have to, if someone comes to destroy you, you have to make sure that person doesn't fulfill that plan. So, but never do I hear anybody say we have to rid ourselves of the Palestinian people. And those who live down south in the, southern Israel near Gaza, many of them you'll find are peaceniks, as the cardinal, alluded to. They want to have a relationship with the Palestinian people. They had one before, but yet the people voted for Hamas. Hamas didn't just walk into power. They were voted into power. And now that you have there are consequences.
What kind of a vote, though? Was it a democratic vote? But, I don't know. Because if you have fear and intimidation, all right, as a means of pushing people to vote in a particular direction when it comes to an election, I don't know if that's legitimate.
Yeah, I think part of
if Hamas is terrorizing Palestinian people to put them in power, I don't know if that's legitimate.
My understanding is there was a vote, and the vote was predicated on the weakness of the Palestinian Authority and the strength of Hamas in providing all kinds of social services for them. So they said, we'll have a better life with them. But they also knew when they voted for Hamas, they were voting for the proposed extermination of Jews. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we want to live together. You can't say we want to live together and vote for someone who wants to destroy you.
A better life, but at what expense?
Yeah.
What's that going to cost us? And it's short term. It's going to be short lived.
Look, you talk.
Because it's not a resolution to the conflict.
You know, I remember years ago, Henry Kissinger was a brilliant negotiator. And, you know, he had a temporary accord with Egypt and Israel. And someone was asked in Israel, do you think Kissinger is brilliant? He said, I'll tell you what I think. If my son never has to fight again in a war, Kissinger is a genius. If my son has to fight again in another war, then he's not the brilliant person people claim he is. No parent wants to lose a child. No parent wants to see a child go off to battle. But look at what has been presented to the Israelis. Look at that neighborhood where you have no choice but to go and defend your land. It didn't have to be that way. This is what many of the Palestinians, unfortunately, followed when they voted for Hamas. So when you say ceasefire, it's a very dangerous thought, because what we say is we cease and they continue to fire. I think we have to be very clear, very careful. Yeah, return the hostages. No negotiation that we want to, but we got to have the removal of Hamas. They can't stay there because what are you doing? You're going back to October 6th where they're ready to destroy you October 7th.
Yeah, and it comes all over again. Do you think the president of Columbia University should be removed? Do you think the president of...
I think if you cannot demonstrate clear and effective leadership, you are not suited for the position. If you don't have the situation under control, if those protesters are running the campus and you're not, then you shouldn't be president.
Yeah.
You know, comes a responsibility. Look, you as a faith leader, I as a faith leader, we assume responsibility. If you can't fulfill your responsibility, get off the pulpit. If you can't do what you're asked to do, what you're supposed to do, you have no business being there. And I'm sorry to say that the president of Columbia so far is allowing these protesters to do whatever they want. They were removed one day, and then they came back, and they're still there. And, you know, the police are ready to remove them. But since it's private property, they have to be invited.
That's an important point. You got to say that again, because many in the public don't understand how that works. They think that, you know, you just call the police, they come in, they remove these individuals. But it's private property. So those in positions of power are the ones who really make the decision as to what's going on the ground.
The president of NYU called the police. They're gone. Columbia, one day, and they're back, and the president has not responded. So, and many students are fearful of walking on campus. I met one student who was wearing a Jewish star. He said, I'm not going to be intimidated by them. But you know what? Not everybody has that kind of brave spirit. There are those who just are, and I understand that.
I like what the Cardinal said when he defined liberal, giving latitude to thought. And that's what our universities should be about. Being able to have differences of ideas and opinions and perspectives, but not have it turn into having my life threatened because of that difference of opinion.
Let me ask
That's problematic.
Let me ask you, Rev. If the Cardinal went on campus today and spoke about abortion, the Catholic view of abortion, you think that liberal spirit would pervade or refuse, prohibit him from speaking? That's where the liberal spirit is today. It's free speech for me, but not for thee.
But not for you. Not for thee. I like the rhyme.
I'm using biblical language.
a little King James language there, Rabbi. I appreciate it. Wow. Great program. Great conversation. And, you know, it's going to continue. You know, I don't think we're going to see resolution, in the immediate future, unfortunately.
I think the decent need to stand up loudly and strongly and speak out against the indecent. Because when you don't hear the decent voice, then all you hear is the other side, and they take over. They rule. So I think we do have that moral response. That prophetic voice is not just limited to faith leaders. Everybody should be using a prophetic voice if you really believe in your tradition. Because it tells you to.
Great conversation, Rabbi. Great program again. And thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Reb and the Rabbi.
Or The Rabbi and the Rabbi.
I'm the Rabbi today. The Rabbi and the Rabbi. Till next time, everyone. May God bless.